The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today is Ms. Patricia Flynn from St. Benedict's Prep School in Newark, where she teaches theater. And Ms. Flynn, I welcome you to be with us this Sunday and wish to interview you about aspects of your work as an educator in the Benedictine tradition and to learn about a conference which you attended in Bavaria in the southern part of Germany last November. So please tell our listeners a little bit about St. Benedict's Prep School and about your work there, and then later on we'll come to that conference.
Sure. St. Benedict's Prep is located in Newark, New Jersey, and we are a boys' prep school. We have about 550 students, ranging in age from about 12 to 18.
Your work there then in theater, it means that you have an active drama department?
Yes, we do. There's a long tradition of theater at St. Benedict's. We have a beautiful theater that was built in 1959. And when I arrived there, I acted as a girl there in high school, and I was invited to come back and teach theater. We do two plays a year. And then we have two short semesters at St. Benedict's. They are two five-week semesters where people do special projects. We've just finished what's called spring phase, and I have students all day long, and what they do is theater. We do theater exercises, we develop a theme, and we create a performance piece that we then tour. Other students in the school are doing community service and other sorts of projects at that time.
Now, the St. Benedict's Prep, of course, is associated with St. Mary's Abbey, which began in Newark in 1868 and is associated with the abbey in Morristown. St. Mary's Abbey there, of course, has the well-known Del Barton Prep School. Now, the Benedictine tradition has a long heritage of education, along with a deep search for spiritual growth within community on the part of individuals, both monks and nuns. The tradition goes back to St. Benedict himself, who was born about the year 580 in the central part of Italy. And St. Benedict, of course, gave us the rule, famous rule, which was the adaptation of earlier rules from the Middle East and for the rule of the Master, the rule of St. Augustine, which were drawn upon by St. Benedict as he formed his type of community. Now, the rule of St. Benedict emphasizes, of course, the link between prayer and work, and the themes of prayer, the rhythms of prayer in monastic life, of course, have been very influential in the history of the church, and these rhythms of prayer, of course, are accompanied with the great drama of our liturgical worship. And this liturgical worship, of course, centering upon the Eucharistic mystery, upon the Mass, as we call it, the Holy Sacrifice and Sacrament of Christ's self-giving, this is the way in which the Christian community saw the possibilities of education, bringing about the extension of drama into the square in front of the cathedral, for example, or in front of the great churches in medieval Europe. And out of that tradition, along with the ancient Greek theater, one developed a vibrant experience of theater within the more modern period. Now, the richness of the Benedictine tradition is related to the fact that it's worldwide. And so last year, as I mentioned, you attended the fifth International Conference of Benedictine Educators. And so please tell us a little bit about this conference. I learned about it from your essay in the prep newsletter last spring, so I appreciate having this opportunity to learn from you more in detail about this conference.
Sure. As you said, the conference was the fifth of its kind, and it was a gathering of Benedictine educators from around the world. There are people from every continent. They run educational institutions. Not everyone who comes to the conference is either a monk or a sister. There are many lay people who come who represent their schools. And it's just a pleasure to meet people from all these different cultures who have in common this one thing, the rule of Saint Benedict, and how to bring that rule into the lives of the children that we're educating. And if I might offer something about Saint Benedict's that makes us, I think, have a particular place within these conferences, is that although the monastic tradition is linked in a way to a rural setting, St. Benedict's in Newark is, of course, in the heart of the city, and we serve many students who are poor and who come from many different cultures. We have about 23 different countries that are represented at St. Benedict's. So when we go to the conference, yes, we are from the United States. We are from one of the wealthy countries that is represented there. But because of the students whom we serve, we have much more in common with the educators who are coming from Africa and the Philippines and South America. So we have a unique place when we are there. And I think that, too, arises out of Newark Abbey chose to remain in Newark. And I think that arose from this vow of stability that the monks take. And so that sense of community, the community of the monastery extending itself into the surrounding community. I mean, that's the challenge that the monks of St. Benedict's prep took up. Mm-hmm. You know, we are here. We are rooted here. And then how do we bring that, what we are, into the community that exists here?
And, of course, that sense of continuity is very important as we look into modern life with its rapidity of change and so on. It sometimes is good to be able to reflect back and to have at least the teachers guide the students into an understanding that among all change, there should be an underlying sense of continuity, that life shouldn't be just a series of disruptions and needed adjustments and so on. That will be part of everyone's life in a certain sense, but at a deeper level, if there can be a sense of profound continuity, then there will be that stability on the part of the individual, and as you say, the stability of the monastic tradition with the vow of the Benedictines to remain in a community that is certainly symbolic and symptomatic of what is needed in every human life. Now, the way in which this is developed, of course, is through a life of prayer. And besides the rhythms of prayer which are celebrated in the monastic, in the abbey or in the church of the abbey, where we have not only the Eucharistic liturgy, the Mass each day, but the rhythms of the divine office, as we call it, the prayer of the Psalms, St. Benedict was very wise, because in some early efforts to lead a holy life, there were individual hermits who tried to recite all 150 psalms each day, and that left very little time for anything else. So St. Benedict put forth the idea of the 150 psalms over the period of 1 week, and so that for 1,500 years almost, until the Second Vatican Council, became the rhythm not only for the monastic life, which it continues, but also for all secular priests, all of the diocesan priests of the Western Church. We all had the same rhythms of prayer. And, of course, after the Second Vatican Council for diocesan priests and for the laity who come to morning prayer, evening prayer in the church, we shortened it a little bit to three psalms each morning, three psalms each evening prayer, so that the 150 psalms are now over a four-week period for those of us who are not in the monastic life itself. Now, when you went to the recent conference in Bavaria, it was at a monastery, a very important abbey called St. Otilian, and describe for us a little bit about the setting of that abbey, and then we'll go into the contents of some of the lectures which you heard.
St. Otilian is an archabbey, and it's in the rural part of southern Germany. It's surrounded by farmland. The abbey itself runs a farm. They have cattle. They have they raise crops. They have woodworking. They have different crafts shops. It could not be more different for somebody who's coming from an abbey in Newark. It's enormous. And they have a great dedication, as I believe do the German people, to finding ways to develop energy sustainably. So they have a project that they've embarked upon for this new millennium of supplying their own energy needs. And if you see the size of the place, you would think that would not be possible. But they have biogas that they capture from the cattle. They collect wood chips from area farmers and use that for heat. And at this point, they're supplying all of their energy, their own energy needs, and selling some back to the utilities companies.
And so this is an ancient part of the Benedictine heritage, of course. In the early centuries, after St. Benedict founded Monte Cassino and other abbeys, the movement spread enormously through all of Europe quite rapidly as a place of safety in usually very rural settings because of the chaos of much of the local culture in so many places where there were conflicts, intermittent wars and oppression of ordinary people and so on. So the monasteries often became a refuge for people who wanted to have a sense of peace in their own lives. And both the Benedictine and later on the Cistercian development out of the Benedictine tradition came the Cistercian monasteries in the 12th century. We find that they were always concerned about their environment in terms of the use of water, the use of land and so on, and they had to be self-sustaining as well as being hospitable to those who came to them as refugees and so on. So this is indeed a modern updating, we could say, of the ancient principle that one should live in harmony with one's environment, with the earth, the land, the sea, the air in which we're dependent,
yes,
of course, for our
yes.
own survival. So you found that the conference gave a context for a presentation?
Yes, one of the speeches was about ecology, not only the outer environment, but our inner environment. And he spoke of the sense of continuity that I think that you mentioned earlier, Father, this sense of we are looking at centuries. We're not talking about weeks or months or years. And so when we think about how we're using the environment and the riches that we have around us, we have to consider what's down the road, who will be here, and how do we take care of the land around us. Now, he linked that. This is Abbot Fidelis from Münster-Schwarzach in a very interesting way with he said most monasteries have an enclosure where there is perhaps a garden and silence, and not everyone can go there. It's a private place. And similar to that enclosure that is a physical one, we should be developing and helping children to develop one's inner enclosure, that a place of stillness and retreat within one that one, in a way, if you want to describe it this way, is keeping this clean in the way that you worry about a clean environment, so that pollutants may come in, but they are dismissed or, put to the side.
That is drawing, of course, upon the biblical tradition of hortus conclusus, the enclosed garden, and the Song of Songs, where the intimacy of married life in family life is to be protected, and that, of course, developed into the monastic tradition, where the Song of Songs became the great text for reflections upon the mystery of prayer, the mystery of the individual's union with God, and then, of course, the church's union with Christ, God and his people. So all of that is an interesting development of this biblical insight that we do need to have that inviolate setting for our own personal growth. And, of course, the terrible tragedy of life is when that sense has been betrayed through others who abuse their authority and so on. Those are tragic developments.
And when you work with students, many of whom come from troubled homes, being able to give them this sense of serenity and a life within, that's a great gift, to be able to encourage students to be able to have an introspective life, you know, that they're not assailed at every moment by the violence that's in the streets and whatever difficulties may be happening in their own homes.
And so the way in which we try to have people cultivate development of a deeper inner peace in spite of whatever storms, even emotional storms, may be challenging a person on the surface, as it were, we try to say that there should be that inner core of one's person where the presence and the sense of God's gifts would enable the person to react in such a way that a certain calmness, even in face of attacks, even in face of pressures, emotional difficulties, everything of the emotional order, of course, comes from without. It's something which is impinging itself upon us. And so if we can have that inner core of stability and of sensitivity to the higher spiritual values, then we're able to draw upon an inner strength to cope with whatever might come, we might say, in terms of ordinary life. Now, when the lecture focused upon this environmental concern and the inner dynamics of having an enclosure, see, it's like the cloister in the monastery. This is the place where people can walk during the winter time or during stormy weather. It's covered, but then in the inner courtyard, one has the herb garden, for example, and all of the healing plants that the monks knew about. This reminds me, of course, of the cloisters in Manhattan. I don't know.
Yes,
if you've,
I've been there. Yes,
yeah, going to the it's manufactured in a certain way. The Rockefellers brought back parts of various ruins of monasteries to construct the cloisters, but they do have that sense of what monastic life was, with the quiet music in the background, Gregorian chant usually, and so on. And times I've been there.
Of course, our challenge at St. Benedict's in the heart of the city is where you hear the sirens and there's all sorts of tumult from the outside streets. Right. There is indeed a garden at St. Benedict's. There is, there are beautiful grounds, but that is the sense that it is a monastery school, and when you step through the doors, that's the environment that you are in. But of course, the kids leave, and so part of our work is giving them the tools with which to deal with the environment out there, that sure. where they live.
Right, and this I'm sure is it's a growing process for them, process of adaptation, and we hope, of course, the parents who have sent them there, the parents are concerned about the, what's best for their children. Obviously, any parents who want to have their children educated have to think of that four-leaf clover that that I use as an image of the way in which intellectual, spiritual, emotional, and physical dimensions of growth all have to be in somewhat of a harmony to be able to flourish. Now, you also had a conference in your, there was a lecture, a plenary lecture on the sense of community. So could you pick up on some of those themes?
Sure. And I think I'd like to start that by quoting
All right.
from the address.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt about the aspect of relationships with one another in the rule. The word brother is used 93 times. I can never stress enough that I believe that the rule is absolutely relational, and this is at the heart of our communal living and working together. Within the community, which is a web of relationships, we can create a sacred space where all can discover their uniqueness and their giftedness. And I think that this idea that there is the community that is the monastery, and that it extends this Benedictine life to the walls of the school, so that the people who are members of the community that is the school, be they adults or students, are working and praying in an environment where each person's unique gifts are recognized and allowed to flourish, and where their weaknesses are also addressed. I mean, when I think of how we work at St. Benedict's, it's very difficult to get thrown out of St. Benedict's because our headmaster, Father Edwin, follows the rule and said, you know, people make mistakes and people need to have a way to come back within community. Mm-hmm. And so rather than your typical suspension, there are students are given means with which to return within the fold, so to speak. And this idea of the school as an extension of the community that is the monastery, I think is at the heart of the way all the different educators at the conference spoke of their schools, that the that there's a relationship that is developed among the students and the adults as well. It's not so much us, there's the adults and then there are the kids. It's growing with one another.
The quotation that you gave us mentioned the rule, of course, which we draw attention to the rule of St. Benedict as the foundation for community life for the last 1,500 years. And I would quote from the prologue, near the end of the prologue, St. Benedict says, "We intend to establish a school for the Lord's service. In drawing up its regulations, we hope to set down nothing harsh, nothing burdensome. The good of all concerned, however, may prompt us to a little strictness in order to amend faults and to safeguard love. So do not be daunted immediately by fear and run away from the road that leads to salvation. It's bound to be narrow at the outset. But as we progress in this way of life and in faith, we shall run on the path of God's commandments, our hearts overflowing with the inexpressible delight of love." Now, the kind of love that St. Benedict is speaking, of course, is the self-giving, the agape in Greek, the self-giving love which doesn't count the cost, the love which is not thinking of what its reward will be for me, but what I can share, what I can give in service to those around me. So I think that this address that you quoted from is definitely drawing profoundly from the wisdom of the sacred scriptures, which Saint Benedict was incorporating into his rule. Of course, he has many quotations from the Psalms and other texts as he presents the prologue to his rule, and then of course the gospel center on the person and work of Jesus is obviously at the foundation of the Benedictine way of life.
We have a saying that's up on the wall at St. Benedict's, whatever hurts my brother hurts me. And I think that tie, that sense of whatever an injustice might be suffered, whatever harm might come to another, that we are linked to that other person.
Right.
Which is not the message that the secular world is giving.
You unfortunately, know, it's, no. It's, you know. I'm okay, you're okay, maybe is what some people might think is positive, but the effort to enter into the mystery of suffering, of course, is integral to the Christian tradition that the way in which St. Benedict ends his prologue draws attention to this point, never swerving from his instructions, that is, from the instructions of God, then, but faithfully observing his teachings in the monastery until death, we shall through patience share in the sufferings of Christ, that we may deserve also to share in his kingdom. Now, this is the principle, of course, within the commitment of the monks, and we hope within the commitment of every Christian, that we have to grapple with aspects of life which involve the mystery of suffering. The shadow of suffering touches every human life in some way or another, and so we can't just push that away as if it can be ignored, but at the same time it must be put in the context of hope, that there is healing, there is possibility of reintegration into the community, as you were saying, for those who sidestep certain rules and so on and hurt others, so they can come back to an understanding of personal and spiritual growth. So your work is drawing us into the vastness of the challenges of communicating to the next generation what we want to share of the profound convictions of a way of life that indeed provides profound answers to modern dilemmas in the light of an ancient heritage. So I appreciate very much your presence with us today, Ms. Flynn.
You're very welcome.
From St. Benedict's Prep School. And I enjoyed learning about the conference that took place in Bavaria in November 2010. We hope that you'll have many other occasions to share with others in the years to come. And I thank our listeners for joining us today for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews. Be with us again next Sunday at 8:30.